Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Miles Podcast. This is your host, Stephen Miller. And today I have the privilege of speaking with Dustin Gross. And he has a podcast, Family by Heart, that talks about various parts of family, but even like building families. And I'm really excited to hear his story because infertility doesn't always lead to fertility treatments. I know I've had a number of episodes on people that have gone through IVF and done IUI and all that, and Dustin's route was neither of those. So it is definitely a part of infertility that I really wanted to highlight. And we got connected on Instagram, and I'm excited to have him on. So welcome, Dustin, to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. I'm honored that we are getting a chance to share our stories on each other's podcast. It was a great experience having you on mine, and look forward to having your episode out soon. And I'm just really thrilled with the movement that seems to be going on right now with men's fertility struggles and the experience that they go through. Because, you know, much of it is usually highlighted and focused on women's perspective, because let's be honest, it should be that they go through majority of the treatment. And
absolutely.
But there's still a lot of mental, emotional, and even physical struggles that men deal with during the infertility process and fertility struggles. And I loved the fact that you are working on a degree in helping men in a different way, but we've also connected with some of the same people within this movement that seems to be arising of men raising awareness for other men. And I think it's having that kind of resource for other guys is so important, because it's going to take men like yourself and Ryan Smith and Keegan Prue and some of the other guests that you've had rising up and talking about their experience and their emotions. That's setting the example for other men that they need to do the same, that it's that they don't need to keep it all bottled inside. They need to get it off their chest and off their shoulders and know that things are going to be okay one way or another. So thank you for having me on, and thank you for doing what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a slow process, you know, and I think it's really important. I can remember starting this podcast, and like my assumption was I'm probably going to have maybe two or three guests, and that's probably going to be it, you know? And I was like, but you know what, if I try and fail at it, then I tried, you know. But to my surprise, I had much more than two or three episodes. You know, it's definitely, you know, we're both doing some really good stuff out there. So the question that I always ask, and it's always intriguing to me, is how did you learn about infertility in general, like just about the topic?
Honestly, it's through experience. I mean, before my wife and I found out about our infertility, I don't really recall knowing many couples that had fertility issues. I knew couples that had adopted, but I don't recall really knowing couples that had fertility issues. I think early on in our relationship, my wife and I visited her family in Tennessee, and I had a friend that was going through IVF. But even then, it didn't really register with me what it really was until we were told that my wife had diminished ovarian reserve and that our chances for conceiving were not good. They were very low. It was pretty much experience how I learned about infertility, honestly. And I'm still learning about it from yourself and guests, again, like Ryan Smith and Keegan Prue. Like, you know, there was books that I read and as well while we were going through it. But it just amazes me on my podcast when I have some of those guys on and they're just, you know, blasé talking about, well, you know, terms like IVF and just IUIs and some of the different letters and stuff. And I'm just like, okay, what is that again? Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Like the fact that they are so knowledgeable in it. And yet, you know, that wasn't, like you said in your intro, that wasn't my experience with it. So.
Right. Yeah. And I laugh at that because I had actually listened to a podcast that I listen to frequently, Fertility Docs Uncensored. And it was literally like the ABCs of infertility. And they talked about like all those, like the different letters and acronyms and social work that's the same. Like we all have the same, you know, like little acronyms and stuff like that. And every once in a while we get reminded, you know, by consumers or patients of like, what does that mean? Like, what does CCS mean? You know, what is CPS? What is CLTS? What is, you know, like, and so forth. And we're just so used to using that vernacular that somebody that's not, has not gone through it is like, I don't know what any of this means.
Yeah. I'm used to ABC, CBS, NBC, and ESPN. That's what I'm used to.
Right.
All those other ones. I don't know. It's just, but it was kind of the same for us going through, kind of moving ahead here, but foreshadowing it, going through foster care and terms like PC, EC, and SAR, and all these different terms. I'm like, okay, like my wife, thank God she's the woman that she is, and she's like type A, where she's on top of things and keeping track of things, stuff like she knew what all that stuff meant going through the process. And, you know, she had to give me the foster care for dummies version and explanation, like, oh, okay. I get what it is and stuff. And then even when I try to explain something to someone else, I'd end up texting or calling her like, hey, what was this thing again? What was that?
Yeah. I do the same thing with my wife. I'm like, you know, I'm talking to something fertility rated. I'm like, what was that thing that you took again? Like, what was that medication? Like, what were the numbers? Like, what's considered normal? Like, always bouncing off like ideas, you know, from her. I mean, she's got the her memory of everything. It is really, really super good. And like sometimes, like for me, like when I try to look back, it's like very like foggy, and I'm like, I don't remember. So let's kind of get into your experience, right? You mentioned you guys went through foster care. I guess, like, what were some of the steps leading up to that? Like, what were some of the, like, the things that, like, did you guys get, like, tested by a fertility specialist or an OB? And, like, what were some of those initial kind of thoughts and feelings about it?
Sure. So, again, my wife and I, we met at 33. And the year that we were both 33, both turned 34. So not only did we find out later on that she had diminished ovarian reserve, but she was also told to be advanced maternal age, which is, if you have a wife, that's a term they love to hear. Oh, you're advanced maternal age. Like, so we were told that. So when we got married, we were told like, okay, because if you're age, go 6 months trying. So normally doctors will tell you go a year trying, and then if you're having problems, then come in and see. So they told us to go 6 months. Yeah. So we did. We went 6 months, and every month it was like, okay, test, negative. Like, okay. So then we went in, I got tested, and then she got tested as well. And then we went into I wouldn't say it was necessarily a OBGYN or anything, but it was more on in the area of fertility. It just wasn't like a specific fertility clinic, but it was still within like the Cleveland Clinic scope of fertility.
Okay.
And that's when they told us that it was diminished ovarian reserve, and that they put our chances at around 5% for us to conceive naturally. Mm. And that even if we went with IVF, it would probably only increase our chances by like 1 or 2%.
Okay.
But they told us that they didn't recommend doing it because my wife on her side of the family has a long history of cancer, and pumping her body full of all those hormones, they would have to go somewhere, and that would just shoot her risk of cancer through the roof. So we struggled mightily with that in the beginning because my wife was confident. She's like, well, I know I could be a mom. I know I can carry a baby. I can go full term. I know I can give birth. I'm strong enough to do all that. And so it was a lot of weighing back and forth. Like, okay, do we want to risk do this? Do we want to do it once? Do we want to go through one round of IVF? Do we want to do Clomid? Do we want to do any of these things? And I kept pushing for no. I don't want to do that. I don't want to risk her health doing that. And I think it kind of threw her off a bit because it was kind of a 180 from what we said on just our second date. On our second date, we talked about the fact that we both wanted kids, that we both had to have kids. So then here we are 7-8 months into our marriage, and I'm saying, no, I don't have to have kids. I don't need you to put yourself at risk because I said I do to a life with you, not to a life with you and kids or to a life with kids without you. I said I do to a life with you. And I didn't want to put her at risk for that. So there was a lot of denial and grief and processing during probably the next year and a half. And then a lot of hard times, especially when we heard those pregnancy announcements from friends and family members. And whether people want to admit it or not, like there's often some tiny grudges with people that your friends or family with, quote unquote, that they get pregnant and you don't. And it kind of makes you frustrated because they're getting what you don't. And it's like, well, not to say that you're better than them, but it's like, how come they deserve it and we don't? Like, how come God put this on our hearts that we wanted to be parents so bad and yet we're not getting to be parents, and yet they're giving this person their child or their second child or their third child while we can't even have one? So it was definitely some stressful times there. And yeah. We saw a grief counselor and went through grief counseling for a good period of time. We saw the grief counselor together. A lot of good information we got from her. It's one of the big things I have taken away from her was at the end of each day, report back to your spouse one thing that you're thankful for that happened that day, one thing you're grateful for. And it's not always easy to do when you're in such a dark period in your life.
Yeah.
But there's the saying where there's smoke, there's fire. And I like to say, if you go looking for something, you're going to find it. So if you're looking for something to be grateful for, you're going to find it. And that kind of helped us to be more thankful, more grateful for the things we did have in life. And I've kind of, for myself as a coach, I kind of expanded upon that. And I tell people to write that down in a gratitude journal and then review that at the beginning of each day. Review the previous day or 2 days or a week, whatever, just so then you're starting that day off in that positive mindset. And it'll be easier to find those things that you're grateful for. So kind of like the snowball effect.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can definitely attest to the jealousy, like of finding out about the pregnancy announcements. And it was interesting for us because the announcements itself, like, were not really the biggest thing for me. It was for my wife. Like that was the hardest thing. And especially when she would have like coworkers come up to her and tell her like, oh, I'm pregnant, you know, with my second or third, but I can remember that when the child was actually born, like that was the most difficult part for me because it was like reality was there. Like, it's like, it's almost okay just because they announced they're pregnant doesn't mean that that's going to end in a live birth, you know, like not that you wish that upon anybody, but it was almost like that mindset of like, okay, it's not a reality yet. You know, like once it, you know, that child came, it was like, I had such a hard time with it, you know, especially when, you know, like my nephew was born, like I probably didn't see him probably for a month before I finally had, you know, like the guts, whatever courage to like actually go see him, you know, see him. But that was hard. It was like that reality in the face. So I can definitely attest to like thinking you know, other people have it so much easier. I mean, the reality is, I mean, we both probably, we don't wish that upon anybody, you know, like having to deal with that. It's also like the validation, right, of you're going through something tough.
Yeah. Well, then you also had your share of third person advice and stuff, like where, you know, where they're telling you, oh, just relax, or they're really just trying to give you unsolicited advice and they mean well, but it is not helpful at all. And then also the miracle stories of like, oh, well, I have a friend of a cousin of a brother of a sister that they were told that they couldn't have babies. And you know what? Like, sure enough, they now have three. They end up having twins. Or it's like, okay, that's great for them, but that still might not be our reality. Like, that's
right.
That doesn't help us. Like, yes, you know, my wife and I are believers and we have our faith in God and knew that He was putting us on some kind of journey. But, you know, it's sometimes you just can't see that clearing when you're in the middle of the woods. And so you don't know what it is. You have to find your way out. And the other thing I remember that would be so frustrating to us is, you know, there's definitely some shame for whatever reason that comes with infertility, just again, because it's kind of expected. You're expected to procreate, you're expected to have your own kids and stuff. So there's shame when it comes to being public about your fertility struggles. And I think it's a little bit more, I don't know if it's more upfront now because of the work that you and I are doing within the space, or if it's just how things have changed over the last like 4 or 5 years. But I feel like it's a little bit more out there now. But I just remember when my wife would allow herself to be vulnerable and post a story, like an article about, you know, things that you shouldn't say to someone going through fertility struggles and everything. Yeah. And then like someone sure enough would comment on that post saying one of the things that you're not supposed to say from the article. And like, it's like, well, clearly you didn't take the time to read the article. So why are you taking the time to leave a comment? Like, come on. Yeah. So if you want to be interested in and hold a place for us in our journey, like, be fully there. Don't be half there and not even read the story. Just send a comment, but be there for us. Like, be a part of it. Because when you're going through that experience and you're going through all that grief and turmoil and stuff, like, you don't need those kind of reminders and those moments of ignorance from other people. It's like, we've seen the specialists, we've seen the doctors, we know, we're talking to the people that have the knowledge that we need. So your two cents really does not have weight with us. Like, it's,
yeah,
you know, just like pennies don't really have value anymore. Like, your two cents doesn't really have value with us if you're not going to be fully committed to being there for us, you know?
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing about that too is people fail to recognize that we have already done our research. We're not just sitting back and just sitting idly. Like, we've just, you know, explored, like, what are the options? What are this? What are supplements? What are, you know, like, we've done all these different things. And, you know, I can laugh while, like, the miracle stories, because I don't remember who it was, but somebody had talked about that, like, on Instagram. And I jokingly said, it's like, you know, like, my cousin's, like, boyfriend, sister, you know, roommate from whatever, you know, like, from college, who, you know, years ago, whatever, they said they had infertility and they got pregnant. I'm like, it's ridiculous. People come up with so much things, you know, and I can remember my wife being told, and it was during a Bible study, that she's like, well, maybe, you know, like, maybe you're not meant to have kids. And she was just like, how, like, do you even say that? And yes, like, that may be a reality. Like, maybe that's, you know, but your faith is tested so much during that, you know? And I just, it's such the lack of understanding.
In an interesting place when we got the news of our infertility, because Literally the day we went in and had that doctor's appointment was my wife's first day at her new job as director of children's ministries at our church. So it's like, you know, if she hadn't gotten that job, if she was still working in her normal like business, like job that she had held before, executive job, you know, we probably would have fallen away from God. We probably would have kind of really given up, but she was forced to be in the house of God. And I honestly couldn't have blamed her if she decided, you know what, I can't do this job. But while we weren't able to have our own kids, she was blessed with 20, 30, 40 kids of our church. You know, suddenly all those kids were her kids. There were still hard, absolutely difficult moments when some of those kids had a new little brother, a new little sister, and those babies came in and stuff. But, or when some of the kids would, you know, kids say the darndest things when they would ask, like, well, when, you know, do you have kids, Miss Leanne? Do you have, you know, when are you going to have kids and stuff? It's like, So those were some hard days, but, you know, it was, you know, being a believer, I feel like it was definitely by design. God pulled her closer, giving her that opportunity to be in the church, knowing that she was going to have a rocky time and a really difficult time, like with our faith. Like it was just going to be a rough journey. And, you know, the amazing thing too is because we're so strong in our faith and have amazing people around us, is some of the best advice that my wife was given is, you're allowed to be angry at God. You're allowed to be, like, God can take your anger. God can take you being mad at him for this. Like, it's okay to be mad at him, you know, because at least you're still feeling something for God. You're still feeling something about your relationship for him. And just like other relationships that you have, my wife and I get angry at each other. You know, I get angry at my kids that I have now. I get angry, you know, at my parents. You know, anger is a part of a relationship. So the fact that they were saying it's okay to be angry, it's okay to process that stuff, it was just great advice that she needed to hear and I needed to hear through that whole process as well. So
yeah. So what are some of the factors that you kind of had in your head, like when you decided that you were going to do foster care, like what were some of the things that you and your wife were like kind of thinking about, factors that led you to make that decision?
Sure. So first thing is, after we dealt with all of our grief and denial and all that stuff, once we actually got to a point where we were in an acceptance phase where it's like, okay, you know what? It's going to be just you and me. I'm okay with that. We're okay with that. So we actually, interestingly enough, we took a trip to Disney when we finally had the acceptance phase. You know, we're like, you know what? Let's start off the year doing something fun. And so we went on a trip to Disney. And you would think like, well, why would you go to Disney? You're accepting that you're finally going to be without kids. And you're going to a place where it's families running around, kids running around. And it's like, well, one of the things is when you saw those families, the parents having those exhausted looks when their kids were having those breakdowns, stuff, and seeing that you didn't have to, like, you know, put a stroller in the stroller line and all that stuff. Like, it was like, well, maybe this isn't so bad. Like,
yeah.
Gave each other a few high fives during that, but it was a really fun trip. I don't think my wife had been. I'd been like once or twice because I had lived in Florida for 7 years. Okay. So we went through that, and then we the next part was we got a dog, and my wife wasn't really a pet person. I was, and suddenly we had this dog in our life that opened our hearts, opened my wife's heart up to a way that she didn't know was possible. She just fell in love with this dog. And the funny thing I remember from that was the week before we got the dog, we had a real bad thunderstorm and my wife was scared because of how bad it was. And she made me like spoon her, nuzzle into her. Mm-hmm. And literally like a week later, when we had the dog, and she had said the whole time, like, we were getting the dog on a trial basis at first, and she had said, this dog is not going to be in her furniture, it's not going to be in her bed or any of this stuff. Well, the dog was afraid of thunderstorms, and it was an even worse thunderstorm than the one the week before when my wife made me spoon her. Suddenly, mm-hmm. she had the dog in the bed, and she was spooning the dog and being a mother to the dog. And I was like, okay, like, here we go. So the fact that the dog opened up our hearts in ways that we hadn't imagined was the next part. And then lastly, our church was involved with a program, foster program out here called Royal Family Kids Camp, where they take kids that are in the foster system to camp for a week, where they just love on the kids. They okay. teach them how to ride a bike. They take them fishing, canoeing. They have like a birthday party for all the kids, because the fact is some of these kids didn't know when their actual birthday was. They had talent shows, all this stuff. So we got involved with that and both volunteered for a couple of days at the camp. And it just kind of opened our eyes to what a big need there is for foster parents in the foster system. Just some of these kids, just unbelievably sweet and adorable, and thinking, oh my gosh, like hearing a little bit of their stories. Like, oh, it was just heartbreaking. So then we got to talking that, you know what, we bought our house with the idea of having kids. And, you know, with me having a life coaching certification and her working in ministry, we thought, like, well, this is an opportunity for us to help some kids and the parents as well. Because the goal with foster care is reunification. And so our idea was that, you know, if there's a way that we could walk alongside of these parents as they're trying to iron out whatever the issue was that had the kids removed from their home in the first place, yeah. while keeping the kids safe and giving them a loving, stable home, then that's something that we felt called to do. And the thing I'll say before this as well, before we got into fostering, we had met with a couple that went through several rounds of IVF and were not able to conceive. They ended up adopting their kids through a private adoption agency. So they kind of told us about it. And my wife and I decided that adoption, especially through an agency, wasn't going to be for us. Fact of the matter is that especially when you go through agency, the cost of it is just so astronomical. I mean, compared to probably IVF and other fertility treatments, it's probably like along the same lines.
Yep, exactly.
When you do give birth, you do have those hospital bills as well, that those add up your stay in the hospital. But we just know that, like, okay, you're told you're going to adopt this baby that was just born, and you go to the hospital after you get the call, and the baby is in the room next to you. You don't get to see the baby yet, but you have to sit in this conference room and sign over a 5-figure check to finish the process after probably other money that you had spent, depending on what style of adoption process you went through. And so we just kind of felt like, you know what, you're basically buying a baby.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, it felt like it's more of like a black market deal kind of thing. It didn't feel like you're getting your child. It felt your son or daughter that you're going to be raising. It seemed more like you're buying a baby.
Yeah,
that was hard to swallow that way. So that's where we kind of led to foster care, and that's where we knew that, like, you know, it's a chance for us to help the parents and the children and reunite them. So.
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing for us, because we had looked at adoption, but my own personal opinion and other people that have different opinions, it's completely okay. You know, like, I completely respect, you know, other people's opinions. But for me, it was just the fact, like, making a profit off of it was hard for me to swallow. And, like, so, like, the agency that we did was non-profit. Like, it was... Yeah, and we were all squared away to, like, have to get our portfolio. And then we just sat there and waited. And then we finally just, you know, I asked my wife, are we going to regret when we're 60 or 70 years old? Like, are we going to regret not trying for our own? And we kind of sat on it, and we both kind of agreed, like, yeah, we really want to try. So that was us, you know, like, I mean, and everybody has, you know, like I said, their viewpoints on that. But the one thing I will say too, after reading this, I mean, some of the textbooks that I've read on like fertility counseling, I think the biggest factor, I think that sounds like that led to like your guys' success with this was you grieved, you know, like the loss of that genetic tie.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, you know, I can probably see how people struggling with infertility, you know, try to do foster care as a second option rather than like, this is like my, I'm all in, this is my option, this is what I'm going to do. And having the mindset of, we're going to, you know, like parents and stuff and have children in our home, you know, and I think that's a huge thing. Like if people decide to go this route, is making sure like you're fully in and not that this is a second choice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because again, they, you know, and I'll talk a little bit about the foster licensing process and everything, but like they tell you when you go into those pre-service training stuff that like, especially when they find out what your, why you're getting into fostering, they, you know, they make sure, you know, like this is, you know, not a replacement for infertility. Like this is not how it works. Like the goal is reunification with family, you know, and anytime since when we've come across couples that are looking into getting into foster care and stuff, like that's something that one of the first things we reiterate, it's like, listen, like you might not get to keep these kids. And the fact of the matter is, like, you know, most children that are in the foster care system, the number of houses they normally go through is usually like upwards of at least 5 or 6 houses while they're in foster care, and sometimes more. Sometimes the reasons why they're moved are ridiculous and you wouldn't believe it, but
yeah,
I mean, and then there's numbers that are more like 18 houses, 20 houses. I mean, it's just staggering, you know, the numbers that some of these kids deal with. But they tell you that the goal is reunification. It is not simply to like, okay, you're going to get a foster child, you're probably going to get to adopt them. Like, and usually when that is the case, you're also looking at the period between a kid coming into your house in the foster system and getting to adopt them is probably along the lines of about 2.5 years before you can adopt them.
Right.
So it's a long journey for people. So if people are thinking that's going to replace the fertility struggles, it's like, you're going to have more counseling to go through because that's not how it's going to work.
Right.
So,
yeah. And I think about like those, like the things that people say, the advice, the unsolicited advice, because how often do you hear, oh, why don't you just adopt? Why don't you just do foster care? You know, without even really knowing what foster care truly is. You know, I think people have this idea that I'm going to do foster care, I'm going to adopt.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes I want to ask them, like, do you know the process? Do you know what it takes, you know, to become a foster parent? You know that, you know, the likelihood to adopt is very rare. You know, it's, and especially with, you know, legislation of families first, they're going to be trying to reunify like with family first and foremost. And mm-hmm. But if they can't, it's typically going to be going to a relative, mm-hmm. you know, and which as it should be, you know, and then in the rare occasions where that's not possible, you know, then like, yeah, you might have a chance to adopt, but that's not going to be everyone's story. You know, like it's going in, like I said, with the right mindset of like, I'm going to be assisting or helping another child and helping another family. Mm-hmm. Being able to provide a safe home, you know, temporarily until they can help resolve their issues.
Yeah, I mean, we have friends now within the foster community where, you know, I met a fire chief down in Summit County, Ohio, that he has fostered between 18 and 25 kids during his adult life, and some of them still stay in contact with him, call him dad. He got to walk one of them down the aisle for her wedding a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I know another couple that had, I want to say, 5 to 6 foster kids that came through their home, and now they're getting to adopt one of them. And then another friend that I grew up with through the schools, that they had 2 foster kids live with them for close to a year and a half, and almost 2 years, and they just went back to their biological family, like, after that long, a year and a half, 2 years. I mean, and that's a long time, like, where you certainly get attached. You feel you are the parent to them and stuff. And to experience that kind of loss, like, is a whole nother world that, fortunately, that my wife and I didn't have to experience. But again, it's what we were signing up to experience.
Yeah. And I can't say that, like, people can be fully resolved of their grief. I mean, I think that it's long lasting, but it's that acceptance piece, you know, like, if you have not accepted that, like, this is going to be what your choice is, like, those losses are just adding to all the other losses that you've had prior to that, you know, like,
compounding effect. Yep.
Absolutely. I also want to, like, paint the picture that, like, foster care is, like, not this great thing. Like, it can be a very great thing. It really is dependent on, like I said, the mindset, like, of what you're going into. It can provide people with a really fulfilling, you know, part of their life, is being able to, you know, help other kids, help families in their time of need.
Yeah. I have done some work in advocating with a group out here in Cleveland called the Cleveland Angels, part of the National Angels Network, where they help support families that are doing the grunt work of foster care. And they had one of the most kind of in your face, mind blowing stats, though, is that 50% of foster homes close their door to foster care after just 1 year, because the experience that you go through in foster care, and when people don't have the right expectations going into it, it's no wonder that 50% close. I mean, there's other factors that go into it too. And I agree with you. There's foster care can be great for so many things, helping kids safe, but then there's also a lot of factors within the foster care system where it's broken. I mean, there's definitely factors where it is broken.
Yeah.
But again, there's parts of it that are good too. So it's just, you know, kind of that, keeping that balance, that yin and the yang, you know, there's that balance of it all. So
you guys did foster care.
Mm-hmm.
And you were on the rare occasion of being able to adopt the kids that you have now.
Yes.
So what was that like?
To kind of give you an idea, again, I mentioned that you go through, it's called pre-service training. And that is, it's normally, like, the classes themselves could take anywhere from, like, 6 to 8 weeks. It's about 40 hours of pre-service training where they give you some useful information about, you know, how kids' brains develop, about the kind of trauma they go through, how to react with certain things, and some of the laws that come into play when it comes to foster care. But they really, there's ways where they really don't set you up, prepare you for foster care. One of the things I will say that's important, to just kind of, again, give you an idea of where my wife and I were at with our head going into foster care. When you are filling out your form, of your intentions of going into foster care, and there is a sheet that says foster, kinship, and foster to adopt. So foster means you completely understand your goal is that you have these kids in your home temporarily before they go either back to the family or to the family that is going to adopt them. Kinship being family members that are going through the licensing so that they can be the, you know, the foster parents to take care of the kids until, and then with the intent that they'll probably end up adopting the kids if the parents, biological parents, don't get their issues sorted out. And then foster to adopt means that you are going into it to foster knowing full well that the kids are probably going back to the home or to someone else, but if there's a possibility arises for you to adopt that you would like to adopt as well. Mm-hmm. So my wife and I originally just checkmarked the foster box, and the county actually came back to us and said, you might want to mark foster to adopt. And we're like, well, no, our intent is fostering. We really don't plan on adopting. We just want to help families.
Yeah.
And stuff. And they're like, well, here's the thing. If you don't mark foster to adopt and the stars end up aligning where you get a child that isn't able to go back to family and you fall in love with the child, which you probably will, and you don't check mark this one little box out of everything else, all the other questions, everything on the whole questionnaire, if you don't check mark this box and you decide you want to adopt that child, you'll have to come back here and do all these classes again. You'll have to have the background check done again, have all the interviews and questionnaires done. Like, you're just gonna have to go through this 6 to 8 month process again. So we're like, okay. So again, we didn't want to mark that box originally because we, in our minds, we did not want to have the idea of adoption as an option, because yeah, we didn't be in a position where we were rooting against the parents. We didn't want to be thinking like, oh, well, if they don't do this on time, if they don't do that, then we'll get to keep the kids. So that was not where we wanted to be at all. But reluctantly, we checkmarked that box. So again, it's like a 6 to 8 month process. You go through the classes and then they do a background check, home inspection. They come check out your home. A fire inspector comes in. Depending on what age you are going to foster, you have to have all the things you need for what ages you decide you want to do. So if you say you want to do babies and infants, toddlers, then you have to have a crib. You have to have a pack and play. You have to have a toddler bed. You have to have diapers and clothes and car seats and all that stuff, because that's one of the things that come check. You mm-hmm. say you want to, you know, go kids, the older kids, like 5 to 9, like you have to have toddler bed or single bed. And not, so you have to have all that stuff ready for them. So we said that we were going to do babies, infants, toddlers is kind of what we signed up for. And then we went through the whole process, background check, all that, interviews. And then we were waiting, kept waiting to hear if we're going to, okay, are they going to approve our foster license? It kind of leave you in a limbo thinking like, is a reason why you're not going to get your license? You think like, wait, like, is there something wrong with Margaret? Is there something wrong with, is this friend going to actually say something about me where they're not a friend? Like, but then we finally got the news. My wife got the call, because again, being on top and orderly and of yeah. everything, her name was the first one to get the call. So suddenly she came home from work one day. I just got home from work. She came home from work and she gave me a card and then a bumper sticker, and the bumper sticker had foster dad on it. And so one of the things that we went through that we grieved about was that she wasn't going to get to have one of those moments where she got to tell me that she was pregnant, one of those cute reveals and stuff. Yeah. So this was her way of giving that to me. And so we cried and we hugged and we embraced and we talked about it. Like, okay, next is you go on what's called a bed list. And the bed list is basically just the waiting list. Your name's put in where they have information, what age child you're looking for, things that you're willing to work with and whatnot. And then once a kid comes up in meeting those requirements, they have that waiting list that they go through. So our person that helped us through the process so far said, no, you could go ahead, go on the bed list. You probably won't get a call right away and stuff. So we called her after we had talked and said, okay, put us on the list. Mm-hmm. My wife headed back to work. While she was on the drive back to work, less than 40 minutes after we called and said, okay, put us on the bed list, we got a call for two kids. We were only, we went through the process to be licensed for one, but it was two kids, a 13-month-old girl and like a 3-week-old boy. They were siblings, and they were with us for 7 weeks. And that was interesting. I mean, there were terrifying moments. There were, how did we get here moments that first night, the 3-week-old, he wouldn't fall asleep. We were trying to get him in a swaddle. And at that point, being first time parents, we had just the regular cloth swaddles where you're supposed to fold it and tuck it in and everything. And he would fidget his arms. He'd punch his arms out before we could get it in and get him just swaddled. So my wife at 1 o'clock in the morning, the first day of being foster parents, she was crying. She's like, did we make a mistake? What are we doing? And so we like kind of looked online, and this is pre-pandemic, like right before. And we saw Walmart had the swaddles with the Velcro on it. So we're like, okay. So at 1 in the morning, I went up to Walmart and bought 3 of those swaddles with the Velcro on it. And like, that was the lifesaver. We came back and was able to get him to get some sleep. Us still not much. Thankfully, my parents came over the next morning and let us take a nice long nap. And they were with the 2 kids. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely an interesting experience, because I went from being like going through the fostering classes and sitting there, like knowing some things about kids, stuff, could be an uncle, but suddenly when the kids were brought to our house and they were both asleep in their car seats when they were dropped off in our house and stuff, and to the girl suddenly waking up in a house where she doesn't know anyone, like, and instincts just took over to pick her up and hold her. And I think that created an instant bond with us, where it was like 0 to 60. Suddenly I'm a dad of a toddler, you know. It's like, what happened? So again, they were with us for 7 weeks, and then they went back to family. Our resource manager told us not to go back on the bed list right away, to take about 30 days, one, to grieve, because it's loss. Even though they were only with us for 7 weeks, it was grief, because we loved those kids. But then also, they say that it's usually about the first 30 days after the children are placed with the other family members, whoever, where the family members realize, you know, I can't do this either. This is too much. And so they kind of had a feeling that since a baby and the toddler were going to a grandmother, I think it might have even been a great grandmother, she had a feeling that they were going to be getting back in the system, and then they'd be calling us back.
Okay.
And the day before we were supposed to go back on the bed list, so like day 29, we got a call for a 3-month-old boy. And we were like, well, what do we want to do? It's like, well, are we really going to say no today and yes tomorrow? Like, what's the difference of a day going to be? So, and they kind of told us on the phone, like, oh, it'll probably be just a short term thing. Like, there's some things with the case that need to be ironed out. Like, it's probably going to be very short term. So we said yes. And next thing you know, that 3-month-old boy that came to live with us we found out months later, he had a little brother that was going to be coming on the way. And even though, again, we're only licensed for one, we said yes to taking the boy, the little brother, the baby coming in, to keep the siblings together. Just because my wife was the oldest of 3 and I was the youngest of 3, and we knew how important siblings were. And then a year and a half later, we adopted him. It was definitely unexpected, but at the same time, like, it was to kind of come full circle with it. Like, we, with the acceptance of God, was not going to give us the children that we asked for. Those moments that we still had during the fostering process of when those pregnancy announcements came and birthing announcements came, they hurt a lot less, or almost not at all now, because we know we weren't supposed to have kids of our own. God was giving us these 2 children, these 2 boys. We were meant to be their parents.
Yeah, that's an awesome journey. And a side of infertility that definitely is not talked about. Which is why I think your story is very powerful in itself. Because when you go on social media and you're talking about infertility, it's usually IVF or fertility treatments, which is one route, but it's not the only one. And a lot of people, especially with some of the states that don't have mandated coverage, like Wisconsin's not one of them, you know, so people are paying out of pocket, you know, five, six figures. And there are other avenues, you know, and really it depended on what God has on your heart, you know, whether that's, you know, you going through IVF or going through foster care or private adoption. I mean, like, there are other avenues into building families. And that is one thing that, like, that you have, you know, like you have a family, you have two kids that you love very much and deeply care about. And at the end of the day, like, blood doesn't, you know, it matters a little bit, but it's really what comes, you know, like what you do with it. You know, I had a guest, he has, you know, a child that's not genetically related to him. And he said, like, anybody can be a father, but certain people can be a dad. And he's like, I'm a dad. Just, you're impacting somebody's life.
Yeah.
And that's what matters.
Yeah. Our, one of our really good dear friends of ours, gave us awesome gifts, even when we were just in foster care, but going through, like, you know, with infertility days, like, Father's Day and Mother's Day, or those are generally hard days. And I remember your podcast actually launched on Father's Day, and I love the fact that you did that. But she gave me, and it's hanging right here in the office, she gave me a beautiful piece of artwork, of a frame with, like, chipped paint around it and stuff. So kind of the worn look of it. But then says, and it, what makes you a man is not the ability to make a child, it is the courage to raise one. And it's right above my desk for a reason. It's just kind of that reminder of, you know, it's you don't have to have a child to be a man. Like, it's not the prerequisite for being a man, nor is having a child a prerequisite for being a woman. And again, like, blood or not, that's why I went with the name for my podcast, Family by Heart. You know, and my tagline again is, we're born into our names, but we become family by heart. And, you know, and that's what I love about being in the space, because, you know, I'm talking about how you construct a family, the different ways that a family is made. And, you know, it is going through fertility treatments. It is going through foster care and adoption. It's deciding to be child free, or deciding that all you want are her babies. Like, that, the, not having a children does not devalue your family, like how your family is created. Like, you know, you could be the world's best uncle, world's best aunt, stuff like, and you're part of that family. Like, it's all, the term family, I think, is just relative. It's the meaning you put behind it and the value you put into the family.
Yeah, absolutely. The last question I have for you, to kind of wrap this all up, is, what do you wish other people would know about your journey? Like, what would be, like, one thing, like one takeaway point?
That it doesn't hurt to have unlimited support and resources. And what I mean by limited, I don't mean, like, you know, financially or whatever, but, like, the family that you are connected to that is fostering, they're faced with situations that you can't imagine and that they can't talk about. They really can't talk about the things that they know about the case. And honestly, a lot of foster parents are told during the pre-service training that you're part of a team securing the child's welfare. You're part of a team. You're integral. You're a very important part of it. But the foster parents are often the last to know anything that's going on with a case. And so when they do get information and find out things, like, they're also expected not to share that information. It's not public knowledge. And the other thing is, you're not supposed to post on social media about, you're not supposed to post pictures of the kids and showing their faces or anything. So a lot of, just like going through infertility is kind of a more of a private and quiet journey, but support is needed. Families going through foster care need support. And I encourage people to reach out to that family, see if there's ways that can help, whether it be making a meal for them, coming and playing with the kids while the parents are able to like just catch up on laundry or whatever it may be. Now, one thing we had babies were in our care with us, we had family or people saying like, oh, I'll babysit for you. Well, when kids are in the foster system, like part of your process of licensing is you give like certain names that are also like alternate caregivers that are licensed, allowed to be like have the child with them for a set amount of time. So it can't be just anyone watching the kids, but there are still ways that you can help. And you can also ask the family, like if, especially if you're close with them, like, hey, you know, is there a process that, you know, can go through or do to help you and be that alternate caregiver that I can help give you guys some respite and assistance so you can get that time.
Yeah.
So, and then there's organizations, like I said, like Cleveland Angels that have programs that lend support to the foster families as well. Again, there's National Angels. Forget how many chapters they're up to, but they're kind of throughout the country. And I'm sure they're looking to expand even more and lend assistance to foster families. But don't underestimate just how big you reaching out and offering to bring a meal over or play with the kids while they catch up on the laundry or do some kind of other errand and stuff. Like, don't underestimate like how big of a relief that can be, or just being a ear to listen to the foster parents because they are going through an emotional roller coaster. Because just think about if you have kids right now, the fact that you have your kids and the fact that they could be going back to someone else any given day and you don't really know. It's a roller coaster. So
yeah, for sure. Well, Dustin, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day today and being able to share a different side of infertility. Like I said, I love your story and I appreciate you sharing it and putting it out there. It's truly amazing, you know, like what you're doing. So I really appreciate you being on here.
Thank you. One more thing I will add too that I always kind of mention when it comes to things that people should know, it kind of falls in line with that unsolicited advice or things that people say during infertility. And I just bring this up because you hear it all the time. One thing that's commonly said, again, intention is good, but one thing that's usually said to foster parents and or adoptive parents is, oh, those kids are so lucky to have you. And I talk about this in my latest episode. It's no, we can be a blessing to those children, but they're not lucky to have us, because think about whatever happened within their prior story, whatever happened in their family, that was a traumatic event, traumatic enough where the kids had to be removed from the home, or the family had to surrender the children because they weren't able to take care of the kids themselves. So the fact that a child is removed from their home does not make them lucky. It's probably quite the opposite. So you can be a blessing to those children, to be that refuge and that rescue for them, but it's doesn't mean they're lucky to have you. So that's one thing I always just kind of point out to people. It's but thank you again for having me, and thank you for everything you are doing for men's fertility and families and with your social work that you're licensing in, and how I just really think between the podcast and the work you're doing, you're really going to help make an impact and help a lot of men and families, you know, both in Wisconsin and just in the world and in general. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Yeah, definitely. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Miles Podcast. The Miles Podcast is on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, and Overcast. If you could like, rate, subscribe, and share the podcast to help other men or other couples find it, it'd be greatly appreciated. Be sure to follow me on Instagram and Twitter for updates on future episodes and more content related to infertility and family building. As always, if you'd like to be a guest, please message me on my social media or email at themilespodcast@gmail.com. and I hope that you will continue this miles-long journey with me.